There, I hit record. Nothing has changed.
Oh my gosh, it's recording.
Yeah, this is your NPR moment.
Oh gosh, this is scary.
Yeah, so Tina, welcome to the podcast. Tell the listeners where you are, because I still think you're in Seoul. I just keep assuming you're in Seoul because it's the only place I know in South Korea, and you're
Right,
not, right?
right, right. I think most people will always think I'm in Seoul, but I am nowhere near Seoul, actually. I am on the other side of the country in Korea. If anyone is familiar with the, I guess with Korean geography, I'm closer to Busan, which is in the south of Korea. I'm about an hour away by bus, in a small town called Chunnyong. It's actually, okay, don't freak out. It's actually only like 30 minutes from Daegu, which is where the outbreak happened. I know that sounds really dramatic, but there's like zero cases there now. And it's like a totally separate town.
Oh,
But
was there an outbreak there like recently or like a few months ago?
no. So the whole Korean outbreak situation like started in Daegu.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So that was where like the cult lady was, right? So it all started from this cult in Daegu.
Wait, hold on.
And
You gotta tell me about this. I don't think I read about this. Was she like a super
yes, it
spreader?
was. Okay, yeah. So this okay, so everything in Korea was fine and dandy, right? And there were like practically no cases. And then this older lady who was part of this cult, I don't know exactly where she got this from, but she got it somehow. She had the symptoms. She had a really bad fever. She was at the hospital, and she's this like older lady. And I guess like, in Asian countries, seniority is, a factor that people consider when they interact with people. So when you're someone who's older and you absolutely refuse to be tested, you are kind of just like, okay, well, it's fine. Just like, if you refuse, then I guess I can't force you. So she refused to be tested, and she had the virus. So she went to her place of worship with hundreds of people, and that's exactly how it spread in Korea. That's how it went from she was patient 31. Before her, there were literally 30 cases total in Korea, and she was patient 31, and that is how it ballooned to like tens of thousands.
It's wild to me that they can do all this like tracing to know like where all the
Oh, in
cases
Korea.
came
Oh,
from.
yeah. I mean, I think in Korea, it's like there's CCTV everywhere, first of all, and they also are so technologically advanced that they're able to do that, and it's very normal to them. But I think like a lot of things that they do here probably wouldn't fly in the US, just because in the US, there's always concerns of, privacy and what's allowed and what's not allowed. Over here, it's like, well, that this is what it is. Like your information is traceable.
Yeah,
So
so is there, because like I've read about how that's the case like in China too, right? Like they're able to like track you on the apps, or they give you like this like what, like red, yellow, and green or whatever it is to let you know like all that stuff, like if you're like in a danger area or whatever. Like is that the same thing like where you are? Like are you like being like physically monitored? Like are people like what's the surveillance like there?
surveillance. I think if you're not infected, you are not under surveillance by any means. But if you are, it's like, well, I was not infected, so I can't speak from a personal perspective. But from what I know, if you do get infected, your kind of like credit card transaction, your wherever you were previously before you were infected, any information that is available that is going to be public knowledge, they will publish that on the internet. You know, that's what it is, because they just don't want other people to get infected. So if you were at, you know, a convenience store on Monday at 2:30, and your credit card transaction shows that, that's going to be published so that other people, if they were also in that vicinity, you know, at that time, they can be like, oh crap, like I should probably go get tested because I was within, you know, X amount of feet from this person who was infected. So they just try to be as transparent as possible with information so that other people can, you know, just be aware of where the infected people are. So I think that was what Korea's plan was this whole time, is just to like be hyper aware of where everyone has been so that they can know just where it's infected, like where like targeted areas are, if that makes sense. So
Yeah, I feel like people, obviously, like the surveillance thing is a little bit controversial, but like you just explained though, it's more for like other people. Like this is the only way like for people to know whether they've been like potentially infected, so then they can like quarantine themselves. Like I actually think it's smart, and I feel like I don't know if you agree, but I feel like especially in the US and Canada with the way things are, like when things go back to like normal or whatever normal is, like I feel like they need some semblance of that, 'cause especially in the US, otherwise people are just gonna run wild and there's gonna be so many waves of this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is the US not already running wild? Can
Yeah,
it?
what is it like just watching what's happening
Yeah,
in the
I'm
US
sorry. Is
'cause you
it
were just
not?
there.
Can it possibly get worse there? I'm sorry. I'm so embarrassed. I don't even know what to say. I really don't know what the situation is since I've left, but when I did leave, it was already really bad. And I say that pretty much like based on my experience leaving New York. New York being the epicenter, you would think that if you're leaving like from a freaking airport that it would be a bit more serious. No, when I left from JFK, like other than wearing masks and kind of just like keeping your distance from the officials or whatever they call themselves who like check your ID and whatnot, they did not ask me a single question about my health history, like literally nothing. There were no temperatures taken, nothing. I was thoroughly shocked. I was shocked.
Let's talk about the whole timeline. So let's start first, because I know you told me you were moving to Korea, I think like a while ago. Like
I told you a while ago, yeah.
when did this process kind of like start for you?
It started in mid-October. And that was when I say it started mid-October, I just mean like I looked into it and I kind of like had the seed planted or whatever. And I was thinking, you know what, I should just do this because this is something like teaching in Korea has been something that I've considered since I was literally like 23. I just never like pursued it. The timing never felt right, yada yada. And then I was like, you know what, fuck it. Like, I mean, I don't know if anyone that I worked with will listen to this, maybe not, but probably not. But I fucking hated my corporate job. It like every single day it was just like sucked more like joy out of my life. So I was like, you know what, I should just do it. I'm not getting any younger. And you know, I've always wanted to know what it was like to live there. So yeah, I started looking into it in mid-October. I contacted a recruiter, and that sounds like super serious. It's really not. Like a recruiter just means like someone kind of, it's just like a middleman kind of, and they're just like more familiar with the system. And it's just a lot of paperwork, honestly. So like setting up the interview, doing your application, and your application, you know, includes lesson plans, and I've never done a lesson plan, so it was just like a lot of kind of unfamiliar territory. So it was a lot of just like how to get like an FBI background check with my fingerprints and yada yada. And it was just like a lot of stuff. And Korea is like super serious about, you know, your background check, your paperwork, you know, getting letters of recommendation. And so that just like took so long. But I think all of that kind of wrapped up within a couple months. What took a while was just kind of the waiting and, you know, getting things like certified and whatnot. So there's a lot of like, once you get the document, you need to get it notarized and like apostilled, and like that shit just took forever. But yeah, so long story short, it was a pretty long process. It started back in October, but it wrapped up, I think, in January, February.
Yeah, so in
Yeah.
January, February, you knew that you were moving to Korea in March, right?
Yeah. Yes. So my start date was always ideally going to be April 1st. So, of course, the outbreak in Korea, like I said, was in Daegu. So that happened like 3rd week of February. So when that happened, I was like, oh fuck, like this is the worst timing ever. You know, if it happened 3rd week of February, it's probably gonna trickle through at least through like April, May, whatever. So then I was like, oh no, like my whole timeline was revolved around this. Maybe I should just, you know, kind of wait it out to see what happens. So yeah, I think it was just very tumultuous between, I would say like end of February through mid-March, because I was like, I need to quit my job. I need to, you know, do this with my apartment, yada, yada, yada. There's like all these things I had to consider. Meanwhile, the outbreak was like this pandemic was just getting worse. Yeah, so it was quite stressful.
Yeah, so at that time, like when the outbreak happens and you're watching all of this, like are you talking to the school that you're going to in Korea to like figure it out, or is it one of those things where like regardless you were just gonna go for your April 1st start date?
So this program that I applied to, you actually don't know what town or city you're placed in until you arrive, which I know sounds absolutely crazy, but so you know the general kind of area you'll be in. Like when I say area, I mean like literally a whole fucking province. But they don't tell you exactly what school you're going to be at, just because, just protocol wise, like policy, it's they don't want to tell you in case you're like, oh, I don't want to be in that particular location, and then you pull out of the whole offer. So they don't tell you until you like arrive and you're at orientation. But of course, I worked through a recruiter, and so during this time, I did, you know, tell him of my concerns, and he was well aware of what was happening. But it was funny. He was like, he's so great. He was very helpful, but he was also just like very honest, saying, you know, the US is gonna get this too. And this was when the cases weren't, it didn't really hit the US yet. So of course, Americans were like, you know, oh, we're good. You know, we don't gotta worry about this. This is like an Asian problem or whatever. My recruiter, who is actually from the UK, but he's been living in Korea for a long time because he like ended up teaching here himself. He was like, "Yo, y'all are gonna get this too." So I don't, you know, it's like
I
I
love
don't
how
really
he's
know what
just
to
t
say.
I love how he's just telling you like, yo, it's coming. Like you're gonna get
Yeah, no, that's exactly. Yo, he was like, "It's coming for you." So
it.
whether or not you take this job, it doesn't even matter because the virus is coming for you, like whether you have this job or whether you don't have this job. So you might as well just like continue with this process.
Yeah, I think it's messed up at the time too, 'cause you're just not sure like which place you're better off in, right? Like now that you look back, you're probably like, oh, you're in a much better place than being in New York right now, but at the time you couldn't know,
You just didn't know for
no,
sure.
because
Yeah,
like
I
you said,
think.
it didn't spread in the US, I think, until like maybe like late February and early March, because I always use when like the NBA shut down as kind of the point, and that was like
As like a
March
reference
11th.
point.
Yeah, no, but that is the reference point, right? Like that was when a lot of things just started shutting down, like not just in the US but here in
For
Canada
sure.
too. So when you're watching that, so you're still in New York at the time, and obviously the cases are starting to spike, not just in New York but obviously like across the US. So just as that's happening, like you're just preparing to head out like in a few weeks.
Yes. So I basically was like, I'm gonna be honest. I was like pretty selfish in my whole kind of like approach to this. I was like, well, I hated my job. I was dead set on quitting this job, and I didn't really have a backup plan, right? I was like, well, I'm quitting this job. I don't give a shit. I'm just gonna do this. And I saw that the cases were getting really bad, and in New York, I mean. And at the time, there were news releases about how Korea was handling things and how cases were kind of tapering down. So I guess I just kind of have faith in how Korea was dealing with it. So I honestly think my timing was like, it was just super tumultuous. I had like the worst but also best timing, if that makes sense. Like it was right smack in the middle of when everything was happening. And then right when I left, it was when like Korea was praised for doing a really good job and like the US was being like totally fucked. So I was like, well, I made the right choice, I guess. So I kind of just like, all right, I stayed the course.
Yeah,
So.
I don't even think that's like a selfish thing though. Like you had these plans already, right?
I did, yeah, but I mean, I was well aware of how, the most risky part of all this was the actual traveling part, right? Like my dad was saying how in Korea, you're totally safe. Like once you get to Korea, you're fine. He was just worried about, getting to JFK, leaving from JFK, being on a 17-hour flight with potentially other infected people and, et cetera. So I think that was the most kind of just unpredictable part of it all. So it was just, yeah, just a lot of kind of like of course, wearing your mask, wearing your gloves. And then, but you can only do so much when JFK authorities were just, they weren't even asking for your body temperature. So there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, were your parents trying to like convince you to not go, or were they just like,
Oh, for
that's what you
sure.
want to do?
Yeah, I think in the beginning it was just more from like a practical standpoint. What are you doing? Why are you going to be a teacher? This is not what you went to school for. Just kind of, the typical questions. But then eventually, and then oh, well, also of course, Korea is having an outbreak. What are you doing? And then they saw that Korea was actually doing pretty well by the time I was leaving. So by the time like the by like the week or so that I was leaving, they were pretty much on board. They were like, yo, you gotta go, just go. So
Yeah, and your parents are in Minnesota, right?
they are in Minnesota, so the cases are definitely not anywhere near as bad as they are in New York. But they had like a what do they call it? Like a shelter in place. That's what they call
Yeah.
it, right?
Yeah, that's like
Yeah, so
the
they
proper term instead of quarantine, because some people get mad when you use quarantine when you're
because
not
it
actually
sounds too
sick.
like aggressive.
Yeah, I don't know, man. People just getting really picky with the terms. Shelter in place does sound better too.
Oh my gosh, that's so stupid. Okay.
Yo, shelter in place
Okay,
just sounds smarter.
shelter in place. Shelter
Yeah.
in place, not quarantine, because quarantine sounds like the world's ending.
No, quarantine is like the proper term of like if you're actually sick, or like if you need to like actually stay in for the
Right.
14 days. Whereas I think shelter in place is
Oh, it's like you're saving
you're
yourself. You're
yeah
like
shelter in place is
protecting
more
yourself.
you're staying home, like you're staying home for like just the good of society. It's not because you think you have symptoms or you're sick.
That's
I don't know.
so
I don't know
fucking
why we're
stupid.
arguing the terms right now, right?
No, we're not arguing. I just think like this is such like an American thing. Like, why is this? Like, who the fuck cares what it's called?
Wow, I love how you're just like looking down on America now after you
No,
left.
they No, man. I looked down on America far before I got here. I was like, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah, so you told me, I think, before we started recording, so you left on March like 29th or around there, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So tell me, so take me through. So you go to JFK and there's just like no protocols there, like you're just rolling through.
Oh, yo, I thought that shit was closed. There was nobody there, which makes sense.
Okay,
I like rolled up in there with
so
all
it
my
wasn't like
shit. I was like, are
packed.
the planes st I was like, are the planes still running? I was like, hi, I have a
Yeah.
flight today.
And for people that like
So
don't have like reference, like JFK is usually just packed, like at any time usually.
yeah, JFK is usually a shit show and everyone's just like mean and rude and they hate their lives. And like, I've honestly never had a positive experience at JFK. I love LaGuardia, I just want to say. So everyone shits on LaGuardia. It's a great airport. JFK, on the other hand, everyone's fucking miserable. But I get there and there's nobody there, so there's no one to really give me attitude. But there's also no one asked me for like any sort of health background or anything. So I was like, it was just so, it was very shocking. But yeah, so there, you would think that there would be kind of changes in protocol there, but there really wasn't. Other than that, the JFK portion of the whole trip was pretty much what I expected, but about at the same time, a lot of flights weren't running, so gotta, take that into consideration.
Yeah, but there was no delays for you. Like your flight was fine.
No, there were no delays. So I took the Korean Air 82 flight, so KE82, and that was, I think, one of the only stateside flights directly to Korea that was still running regularly. So that, 'cause, so outside of New York, if we're talking like Atlanta, Minneapolis, direct flights to Korea were either halted or very, very kind of like sporadic or, delayed, whatever. But the New York one, there's a single daily New York flight that leaves at 1 p.m. Eastern time, pretty much every day. And that's the flight that you would have to take if you needed to get to Korea. And at that time, I think by that time, a lot of Korean nationals living in the US realized what was happening and they realized that it was safer in Korea. And I'm talking like either you're a Korean national or you hold dual citizenship. So my flight originally, when I first booked it, it was half empty. And I thought, well, great, I'm gonna get a whole aisle to myself. No, by the time I left, yo, like the situation was so bad in the US that all the Koreans were like, fuck this, we're leaving to go back to the motherland, right? So my plane was like, it was full. It was at full capacity. It was, I don't know if they were like all, dual citizenship people or if they just held Korean citizenship and they were just in the US, just like, I don't know, hanging out. I don't know. But yeah, it was a full flight. It was a full flight.
And were people masked up?
They were for sure. But I think like at the same time, Asians, it's not weird to be wearing masks. Like before, even before this whole situation, wearing masks was just kind of seen as normal. When you look at China dealt with SARS. Korea also dealt with MERS. They had a pretty bad MERS outbreak a few years ago. So, I had people joke about how they still had backup ramen from the MERS outbreak, like to store it in their apartment because they like bought mad ramen at that time. But so I think just from those experiences, wearing a mask in Asia just wasn't, it wasn't really weird. But in this situation, everyone for sure had a mask on. Like, you had to have a mask on to get on this plane.
I don't even want to judge, but like, I've been like going out for walks and stuff, and like, only Asians, mostly Asians, have been masked up, whereas everyone else is still pretty carefree about it.
I was actually wondering about that. So in Toronto, there's obviously a pretty big Asian community. Well, same in New York, but I guess I was just wondering, in Toronto, outside of the Asian community, is it kind of similar as it is with in New York and the States, where like some people might have masks, but in general, it's like still seen as like not necessary?
Yeah, I don't think they've officially, you know, made it mandatory to wear masks here. And when I'm just going out for my walks, like, I definitely notice there's a lot of people that aren't wearing them, and I'm definitely judging every single one of them.
That's so funny, because I remember when the outbreak first happened, there were so many Instagram stories just about how you shouldn't wear masks. I don't know if you saw those. Did you see those? They were like, I will judge you if you wear masks. Don't wear masks unless you're infected. And I understand it was like also referencing the scarcity of masks. I totally get that. But not all of them were talking about scarcity. It was basically just like, don't wear a mask. It's useless. And I'm over here like,
people are just idiots, man.
I don't know. I'm over here like, isn't a barrier better than no barrier? Also, I'm sorry, are you like a public health official? I don't understand. Why are you like posting multiple Instagram stories about how you shouldn't wear a mask?
Yeah, there's so much, and there's still a lot of just disinformation, and there's just a lot of dumb people around, man. Like, I think, like, wear a mask, just be safe. Like, it's not just for yourself, it's for other people too, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that was what was so confusing for me, since like some of those posts were saying, unless you're infected, you shouldn't wear a mask. And I'm like, but symptoms don't even appear for potentially, what, 10 days? So if you don't know you have it, how can you wear a mask to prevent the spread if you don't know you have it? It's just like, it didn't even make sense.
Yeah, here in Toronto, there's like anti-lockdown protesters, probably the same as like in the US, just, you know, not as huge just because of the population here. But yeah, people, there's just like, there's a lot of stupid and selfish people, and it's the same here in Canada as it is in the US. And I feel like it's funny you mentioned like SARS and MERS, like some of the Asian countries like China, Hong Kong, like Korea, it really shows that they learned a lot from that too, right?
Right, for sure.
So you're in JFK, and you take your 17-hour flight, and I know you posted this on your Instagram, I think, last week.
Oh.
and then when you get to Korea, that's when it gets interesting, right?
I guess to kind of like clarify, I was part of this like cohort of teachers, right? There was supposed to be originally maybe like 7 or 8 other teachers, you know, in my group. Every month or so, they have, at least the program I apply to, every month they have, you know, a few teachers come into Korea. So I did not realize that this is what was going to happen, but I ended up being the only teacher from my cohort to successfully make it here. The other people, the other teachers, they either had flight cancellations or they just completely backed out, you know, of the whole offer, which is totally understandable given the circumstances. So yeah, I landed, and it was just this whole protocol of foreigners landing in Korea. It kind of all came together overnight, more or less, for the Korean government. So they probably didn't have a ton of time to like really smooth out the details and like the transitions. So I get there, and there's really only probably four non-Korean nationals on the flight. And I'm gonna preface all this by saying that I'm Chinese, so they basically thought I was Korean. So my experience landing in Incheon might have been different had I been like a white person, you know, where you're like, oh, this person's clearly not from here. Let's help them like get to the right line. Like I started out just like standing in the wrong line completely. I was in like the Korean Nationals line, which obviously was the wrong line. And I didn't see where, like, I had been to Korea before. I'd been in this freaking airport before, but in like the chaos of everything, I wasn't really aware of, I was confused as to where I was supposed to stand. And there were just like mad people, right? So, and then everyone in the airport was just speaking Korean. Like, no one was saying, oh, foreign people should stand here. But at the same time, like I just said, I don't look quote unquote foreign to them. So no one said anything to me. So I stood there for like 40 minutes, just like, you know, dicking around, just being like, okay, like this is taking a really long time because they got to like screen every single person.
And you had to connect to another flight, right?
Yes. So my original flight, my original itinerary was JFK to Incheon, to Seoul. And then from there, I was going to just like do a quick connection to Busan. Busan also has an international airport. But then because of the whole situation, I guess they canceled all of those flights from Incheon to Busan. And then you would have to leave Incheon and take a bus to Gimpo Airport, which is like their domestic smaller airport, and take the flight to Busan from there. So essentially, I only had maybe 2.5 hours to go through immigration at Incheon, get on a bus, go to Gimpo, and then like recheck all my bags and do the whole process again within like 2.5 hours. And I already knew this was just, that was like not going to happen, but whatever. So yeah, so I landed and had to go through about a billion checkpoints. Once I got into the correct line in the foreign nationals line, you know, they requested that you download two different health apps. So these two health apps were created by the Korean government, and you had to basically download them and then check in every single day your body temperature and your symptoms, because they assume that once you land, you're gonna be there and be in self-quarantine for at least 2 weeks. So that was like the first step. You have to download these apps. Like the first checkpoint was like literally this guy checking your phone. Like you have to have your phone out and you have to have those apps open on your phone. And he checks to make sure that they are correctly downloaded, that they're the right apps, and that he and then he goes into the settings to make sure that the location tracking within those apps are turned on. Like you have to have it on. So that was the first checkpoint. And then after that, you go through these various checkpoints of like, you know, submitting your health declaration form, getting your body temperature taken. Then they log that. If it's above 37.5 degrees Celsius, but I was worried because I was like rushing. And then when you're rushing, your body temperature, you're sweating. I was like, oh my God, they're gonna like send me back. I was like super scared about that. So they logged it. And then after that, you had to go to another station where they manually dialed your local contact number. So you have to have a local Korean contact vouch for your arrival. So you can't just like fucking show up and be like, yeah, I'm gonna stay at a hostel and like tour Korea and like, you know, have so much fun. You have to have someone just like say that you are allowed to be here and that you have a reason for being here. So my contact was like the program coordinator. And so And like when I say they manually dial, I mean like they have like a fucking landline. They have like multiple tables, and like each table has a phone on that table. And then they take your information and they call this person. Like they dial it in front of you. And this person is not available if they like stepped outside, if they went out to like go buy groceries, whatever, and they don't pick up, well, they'll try again maybe, but if they're not available, then like you're fucked. Like you can't pass that checkpoint. And my contact, he was in the shower, he told me later. So he didn't pick up the first time. So of course I was freaking out. Like, oh my gosh, please try again. I think like this is the correct number. So eventually it worked out. He picked up, and they just have to confirm that you're there for legitimate reasons. So and then after that, they send you to like immigration, which is actually really easy. They just scan your passport, work visa. You go grab your shit, your luggage. So then after that, I grabbed my luggage. I was like, great. I might have just the right amount of time to get to the next airport, right? So I'm like booking it through the arrivals area in Incheon, like, excuse me, excuse me, excuse me, I gotta go. But like then all of a sudden this like random person comes out with a walkie-talkie and says, wait here, you gotta come with me. And I know like minimal Korean, so I knew like enough to realize, okay, I need to wait here and I need to just like listen to what he's telling me to do. So I'm sure he probably said maybe what we were doing, but I didn't really know what was happening. So I just followed him. I was like, all right, well, whatever. So just follow him. And then we're like exiting the arrivals area. Like we're going out into like the freaking street. And I'm like, fam, I gotta like exchange currency. Like, are we like where are we going? So we go out to the virus testing area, right? They had tents. So then I'm thinking, why am I being led here? Like at the time, I thought the protocol was if you're a foreigner and you're showing symptoms, then you would get tested. I was not showing symptoms. My body temperature was, in the normal range. I was very confused as to why I was being tested. But, I just came from JFK. So maybe they were like, she just came from New York. That's bad. Get her tested. So had to go there, had to get tested. It was really awful. I don't know. What is the testing situation like in Toronto? Like, can you just go somewhere and get tested?
Yeah, I think there are facilities for tests, but the testing overall numbers have been really low here, which has been like a huge concern. So you talk about going to this testing station, and what do? They like stick a, it's like a tongue swab and like a nose swab.
Yeah, so they I think by now that depending on the country and depending on where you are, there are different testing options. But when I was there, the only option was to first get your tongue swabbed, which is obvious, like that was fine. And then next was a nose swab. It was so awful. I can't even like I know that sounds stupid, like it's just a nose swab, but have you ever had something stuck so far up your nose that you thought it was gonna come out like your eyeball socket? It was so
Sorry,
fucking uncomfortable.
I don't mean to laugh. No, because
It was so
I've seen
awful.
pictures. I've seen pictures and like videos of these nose swabs, and honestly, no, I'm with you. They look kind of intense.
It's just like a very unnatural feeling. Like, when would you ever have something that far up your nose?
Yeah.
And then
I
like
have
and
no
like
answer for you. Yeah.
and it's not like they just stick it up there and just like take it back out. It's like they stick it up there, this Q-tip, and they like rub it around. It takes like a few seconds. Like meanwhile, your eyes are watering, you're trying to think happy thoughts, like maybe it'll be over soon. The airport one actually wasn't. I did another one later after the quarantine. That was way worse. But the airport one wasn't too bad. So they did that, and I was like, cool, great. In my mind, I was still thinking, I gotta get to like my next flight, right? which is stupid. I was like, I gotta go. And then, so I asked them, can I go? I was like, can I go? And they were like, no. And I was like, what do you mean? They're like, well, results take 6 to 8 hours. So I'm thinking, okay. So I did not know what to where to go. I think that was my biggest issue with the whole landing process. Just nobody really told you what was happening. And of course, part of that is attributed to the fact that I don't speak Korean. But I mean, I think if you're doing all this, you should maybe like have things printed out in English, and they can even take their phone out and use like fucking like Google Translate on their phone and like show me, like type out what's happening. But I was just very confused. I'm like, okay, so I can't leave. And so they finally got some guy who works there who does speak some English, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, you need to cancel your flight. And I'm like, I think by now I kind of realize I can't go to my flight. Yeah, like it's not even like I get it, it's canceled, I'm not going, I can't go. And then he said, so you need to go to an isolation facility. So I said, okay, where is the facility? And I'm thinking the facility was like within walking distance.
Like the Marriott, like the Marriott across from the airport.
I was like, is it like connected to the air? I was like, maybe. I was like, okay, just tell me which way to go. And he's like, you gotta get on this bus. So, okay. So then I realized, okay, so this is like serious. I gotta like go to this facility. So it was like a nice bus. It was like a coach bus. You know, they took my luggage. I got on the bus. There were some other foreign nationals.
I appreciate you describing the quality of the bus, by the
Listen, this is Korea. They don't just like it's uncomfortable, but they'll still try to make it slightly like less uncomfortable, right?
Yeah, so this place is like far away. Like you're taking a
It's
bus there.
far. It's so the airport is in Incheon. I think a lot of people, they think that the airport lands in Seoul, but like as all major airports are, they're never in the city. Like JFK is not in Manhattan. So the main Korean airport is in Incheon, which is roughly an hour outside of Seoul. So like to the north of Seoul, I believe. So then Cheonan is 2 hours south of Incheon. So more or less an hour south of Seoul.
So that's where the facility was.
Yes. I can't speak for what the facilities are now. I don't know, 2 months down the line if they've, open other facilities or changed it. I really don't know. But at the time, yeah, it was in Cheonan. It was about an hour and 45 minutes drive by bus. So yeah, you can imagine my surprise when we're just driving and driving. Granted, like I landed in Korea at like 11:30 a.m. By the time I got to this facility, it was dark. It was like fucking, I didn't know what time it was. It was like at least like 7, 8 p.m.
Yeah, and by that time you had traveled like almost 24 hours, probably past that.
I don't even know. It was, I had no like time reference by that time. So yeah, I get there. It was a hotel that they had converted into the isolation facility. We get there, we check in. Everyone was confused. No one knew what was happening. Everyone was in hazmat suits, which didn't make things any less alarming. I was still like very alarmed. I was like, oh my God, everyone's in a hazmat suit. Like, what's happening? Every single person had their own room assigned, and then you went up to your room, and the room was actually really nice. It was, again, commenting on the quality here. It
No,
was a
which is
nice room.
important too, right? Because I feel like all of this was just happening,
Right.
like in real time.
In real time, yeah. And I was like, just trying to roll with the punches, trying to be positive. I get in there and I'm like, oh, okay, this is pretty nice. But like, of course, once you step in, you can't step out. Like literally, you cannot step out. You're in this box, this nice, comfortable box. You cannot step out. They do deliver food straight to your door, which is really nice. But of course, once they deliver it, you just have to be very careful when you open the door. That's the only time you're allowed to open the door. And just make sure no one else is in the area when you pick up the food in case of exposure. And when they bring the food, they announce it through like an intercom in the ceiling, but you don't, I didn't see the intercom, so it just sounded like a voice was coming through the walls. Like it was actually like Black Mirror. I felt like it was very futuristic, which is very, Korean, I guess, because Korea is very technologically advanced, but I was just not ready for that. I was not ready.
So how long did you have to stay there? Was it just an overnight thing?
Yes. So I got there probably, like I said, around 8 p.m., stayed overnight, ate dinner. The next morning, they deliver breakfast at around 8 a.m. And then at like, well, no one knew what time you were allowed to leave. So it was just, you're kind of just like on standby the whole time. Like, make sure things are pretty much packed up just in case they give you the green light. And then finally, this lady's voice comes out again saying, if you didn't receive an individual call about your test results, that means you tested negative and then you can leave. They told us this at around 10:40 in the morning. And then she was like, the shuttle bus that we're providing, like the same shuttle bus that you took to get here, we're providing the same bus for you to either go back to the airport or to the local bus terminal or to the KTX station, which is like their Korea's like high speed rail station. They're like, it's leaving at 11 a.m. So basically, it was leaving in 20 minutes. So I was like, oh shit. So I was like blow drying my hair. Like I was like mass chaos in my room. I was trying to get like everything, taken care of. There's so when you're in quarantine, your trash has to go in a specific trash bin or trash bag. And then before you leave, you have to spray it down with a disinfectant and then tape it up. And then dispose of it. So all of that was provided in the room. And then before you leave, you just put that box outside of your door, and then you leave, and then you check out, and then you get on the shuttle bus. But it was just all very kind of like chaotic in a sense, because they just didn't give you a lot of information beforehand, which is kind of the theme of. Of this whole situation, like you don't know what's happening, but you just kind of have to roll with it.
Yeah, so then you end up in like you get to the town where you're staying at now, right?
Kind of. So I took the bus to Changwon, which is like the city where I was meeting my coordinator. So that's like the main city where the program is based. But depending on where you're placed, they take you to your placement city once you arrive in Changwon. So they physically drive you to your placement city because, as I mentioned earlier, that you don't know what your placement city is. So there's no way for you to like directly go there yourself because you don't know where your city is,
Yeah,
if that makes
it's
sense.
wild to me, like even to that point, you still don't know like where you're gonna be.
Yeah, I'm just like, well, actually, in this circumstance, they told me earlier than usual what city or what, I shouldn't say city, what town I would be in, because, it's a special circumstance, so they just wanted to let me know where I was eventually going to end up. And normally, they literally don't tell you the city you're going to be in or town you're going to be in until orientation.
Yeah, that's
So.
wild. So then you end up, and then you had to self-quarantine for 14 days, right?
I did, yeah. So once you get to your apartment in your official, placement area, you have to, even if you test a negative, which obviously I test a negative, but once you arrive at your apartment, you have to continue quarantine. So when I say continue, I just mean for the 14 days. The 14 days start from like the day of your arrival. So technically, I wasn't actually in my apartment for the full 14 days of quarantine. They just counted the first like couple days of my arrival before getting to the apartment as part of the 14 days. So it's not, I mean, that was how my situation was. Other people who weren't in my specific situation, like if you landed and you are staying with like, a family member, you would spend the whole 14 days in that like Korean residence, right? So it just has to be full 14 days in a Korean residence. It cannot be at an Airbnb. It cannot be at a hotel. So if you are on a tourist visa, or if you're American, or on a passport where, you don't have to have a visa to enter Korea, you would, from what I understand, you would have to pay roughly $1,000 to be quarantined for 2 weeks in the government facilities, because they don't accept like tourist facilities like hotels, Airbnbs. You can't carry out your quarantine there.
Yeah, which I think is smart, right? Like,
Yeah,
because.
because I mean they can't hold you accountable for that, right? They can't. I mean, they can maybe track you, but there's just like, it's probably too difficult to do that. So you would just have to be, you just have to do, the standard government quarantine.
So you do your
So
14 days, and after that, you life has just been normal for you, right? Normal-ish.
normal-ish, yeah. I think during the quarantine, of course. When I say quarantine, I mean like fam, you literally can't step outside. Like I had a horrible toothache randomly within the final few days of my quarantine. It was so bad, I was literally sobbing. I was in tears. And I was like contacting my coordinator saying like I don't know what to do. I'm like literally ready to like jump out this balcony because I'm in so much pain. But they're like, "Well, you don't have health insurance yet because you haven't started work. And also, you're under quarantine, so the best we can do is bring you some meds." So I was just popping pain meds for the final couple days of quarantine, and just like trying to get through it. Like they were basically ready for me to die from tooth pain than break quarantine. Like it
Yeah,
was
I feel like
absolute.
you're being a little dramatic.
No, for sure though. I was in tears, Alex. It was so bad. I've never felt pain like that. Before. I've never had a tooth pain like that before.
You're
They were
okay
just
now.
like, "No, I'm fine now," but they were
Okay.
just like,
So we can laugh about
"We can laugh about it.
it.
Yes, we can laugh about it." But they were seriously like, "I'm sorry, you cannot leave to go to a doctor or go get like stronger meds. Like there's nothing we can do for you except provide you with like the drugstore kind of over like over the counter pain meds, which in Korea they're not strong at all. It's not like the like Tylenol is not available here. Like the strength of medication here is far lower than it is in the US.
Yeah, so you fight through your toothache and your 14 days are done. So what's life been like since? Like what's the town that you're staying in at? Like what's that like? You've just been like moving around like it's normal or?
Yeah, everything is pretty much normal here. Of course, everyone wears masks. That's just standard. I mean, you have to understand that Korea was never on lockdown. Just as a country, there was never lockdown protocol. There was never shelter at home. businesses were always open unless you, personally decided as a boss that you didn't want your business to be open. That's your choice. But overall, everything was always running just at a lower capacity. But I will say I can't speak for what life is like in Seoul or, Busan is probably similar, but Busan is also like more sparse compared to Seoul. Seoul is like New York, right? Seoul is very densely populated. Busan is a little bit more like LA. It's more spread out. So it's less kind of tumultuous in that sense. But in my small town, the population's very low. So, there's not that many concerns. In my entire province, there's only like maybe 100 cases ever of the virus. So, yeah, I mean, like, life is pretty much normal for me. I still work, even though classes haven't started yet. They start next Wednesday. Schools are officially opening. Yay. I've been doing Zoom classes from the school. So I still go to school and work from there, but I do the classes from my classroom. And yeah, so we will see once schools open in Korea if we will get a second wave. That's the biggest concern, right? Like when you have all these students in close proximity to each other, what the effects are going to be.
Yeah, and have you like met a lot of people there? Just I guess people that are working at the school too and things like that.
Are you asking if I have friends?
Yeah, that was my nice way. That was my shelter in place way of asking
I have no friends here.
you.
I have no friends. It's kind of great. No, I think it's just because I think if I were like 25, 24, I'd be like, oh my God, this is fucking lame. I don't have any friends. But this is pretty much my life in New York. I don't really fucking talk to people except for like four friends. I get here, I watch Netflix, do my lesson planning. I work out in my apartment. I can't jump too much. I got in trouble with the person below me. He came upstairs and was like, "You're jumping too much. Please stop."
Oh, you got a
So,
complaint for working out?
yeah, I got a he came upstairs and he was like, "You are jumping so much." And I was like, "I'm so sorry." So, I only do low impact workouts now. If there's any burpees or anything, I'm terrified. I'm like, "Yo, this person's gonna come upstairs and like yell at me in Korean." So only,
Are there other people in the
yeah.
school though that kind of have your story, like they came from the US, or you said it's just you, right?
Oh, yeah. So, with public schools, you are the only English teacher at each school. So it's not like there's like multiple English teachers at one school. So it's kind of like if you, I don't know how things were in Toronto, but I feel like in the US, more or less, when you go to school, there's like a designated Spanish teacher, there's a designated German teacher, and then there's obviously different levels. But it's the same situation here. At one public school, there's one English teacher, and that's me. So I don't really have other coworkers I can like connect with in that regard. The other like there's other teachers in terms of homeroom teachers, like third grade teacher, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade homeroom teacher. But they're all generally a little bit older since I don't live in Seoul. I live, obviously in the more suburban country area. So the teachers tend to be a little bit older. But they speak like very minimal English, which is nice. So I can at least communicate a little bit. But yeah, to answer your question, I don't really have any friends here.
No, I thought you were gonna tell me you made friends with like everybody there.
No, I mean, it's hard because I live in a town where there are no bars. I mean,
Oh, yeah,
when I
that's
say there,
troublesome for you too.
it's very troublesome. I mean, when I say there are bars, I mean there are like kind of small pubs, but I haven't been to them myself because some of them I don't think they're open right now. And then I think also in Asian culture, when you're at a bar by yourself, especially when you're a female, it just like looks a little sketchy. And like, not that I give a shit. I'll like totally go to a bar by myself, but like, especially when you're in like a really small town where there are not that many people, it's just like it's particularly noticeable, right? So, yeah, it's just I'm just saying I'm in an environment where it's not particularly conducive to, being super friendly and making a ton of friends.
Yeah, but you don't care. It's great for you.
Yeah, I kind of love like not talking to people.
No, trust me, I can relate.
Like, just do my shit, do my job, whatever.
Yeah, so you haven't. Oh, yeah, so you said you've been doing the Zoom calls, but you officially start like teaching like in person next week then.
Yes, I'm really excited. I will say, okay, so it's kind of complicated in the sense that I've actually already met a portion of my students because I'm not sure how it is in other cities, but in a lot of towns and cities here, for students whose parents are not available during the day to, supervise them, the students still go to school. So the school provides like a supervision center where the students can like, spend the day, kind of hang out, do some like very basic lessons, whatever they are. So I was still able to meet some of them. And so even if I, so for example, if like I'm teaching a sixth grade class, if there are like a handful of sixth graders that are physically in the school, they would still do the Zoom classes from a different classroom. So the protocol is like we still distance ourselves from the students during class, but we still do the classes, if that
Yeah,
makes sense.
no, it does. That'll be cool though when you get started. Obviously, hope everything is okay like in that town and in Korea and stuff. How long are you planning on staying there for? Like, did you sign like a 1 year thing or how does this work?
The contracts are for 1 year. You can, of course, choose to renew if you want. I don't know. I can't. It's hard for me to answer that just because I don't know how it's going to be. But so far, I really, really enjoy it. And I feel like because the process took so long to get here, like it fucking took so much effort and time just to get here, that I feel like if I only stayed 1 year, that would actually be a waste. I feel like it wouldn't even balance out, right? So I'm hoping to stay for at least 2 years, but I really don't know. My parents think it's only going to be for a year. My parents think this is like, oh, I'm just going to get it out of my system after a year.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to tell them. I'm not telling them at all that,
Yeah, you gotta ease them along, you know?
right. So, yeah, so I don't know. I don't want to get too ahead of myself and say like, oh, I expect myself to hang out here for at least, X amount of years, and then, kind of taking it day by day.
Yeah, you never know. You might have another midlife crisis there, you know?
Another midlife crisis. Yeah, who knows? But I mean, at this rate, with how the US is going, I don't know, man. I might just stay here, camp
No,
out
seriously,
here.
nobody's trying to be in the US right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think like being an Asian foreigner has its challenges. But I mean, I experienced that when I was living in Shanghai for a bit. I kind of did this before where I like quit my job to go move abroad to Asia. I did that in Shanghai, but the situation was a little bit different because I'm Shanghainese, so I actually understand, the language. So it was a little bit more like nuanced and complicated, but I feel like being an Asian foreigner in Asia is like it's there's pros and cons, all right? There's pros and cons. Like imagine you blend in so you don't stick out. You're not like, a typical what people think a Westerner looks like, so nobody like stares at you, whatever, which is nice. But at the same time, like you also don't get like the benefits of being a foreigner, right? Like people don't roll out the red carpet for you because you just look Asian, you look regular. So
Yeah, and I imagine like the language barrier, obviously, like you talked about, can't be easy too, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this, how Korean's difficult. Korean is really difficult. Like I know minimal Korean just from my, K-pop fangirl days back in the day. And I like self-taught years ago the, Korean writing system, the alphabet essentially. So, like I came here with like a decent grasp of like basic Korean knowledge. But I mean, it's just like it is really difficult, especially in a small town. When you're in a small town, like, dude, nobody speaks English. It's not like Seoul. Like, I need people to understand, like, I'm not in Seoul. I'm not in Seoul.
Yeah, I kept
So,
assuming that too. I feel like you corrected me many times.
like, I'm not in Seoul. I'm so far. I'm not even in like the vicinity of Seoul. I'm so far from Seoul.
You say you're like an hour
So.
away, or is that more than that?
It is by bus, I'm like 4 hours away. I'm on the other side of the country. So Seoul is in the northern part. I'm in the south.
Damn. But listen, stay there for
So,
more than a
yeah.
year, because before all of this happened, I was probably gonna like come visit this summer or something.
You have to visit. And like, I'm assuming you're gonna land in Seoul, like in Incheon. But like, I'm near Busan. So you just it's really easy to get from Seoul to Busan. Busan is the second biggest city in Seoul, or not in Seoul, in Korea. And it's super fun. Everyone loves it there. So you have to visit. That's
Yeah.
also where they filmed part of Black Panther. Do you
Oh,
remember?
shoot. Oh, yeah. The yeah. That
Yeah.
one scene when they went in the casino or whatever.
Yeah, that was in
Damn.
Busan.
I just want to recreate a Itaewon class.
Oh. I'm like so shocked that you're even watching like a trendy Korean drama.
It's on Netflix. There's nothing to do right now.
Oh my gosh. It's like it's ironic because recently Korea had a spike in cases in Itaewon.
Oh, was that the nightclub?
That
Was
was a
that the nightclub
nightclub.
outbreak?
That was a nightclub. Yep. That idiot who was supposed to be quarantined, he
Yeah.
decided to go hit up five nightclubs in one night.
So is Itaewon just like a strip of like full of like restaurants and bars and nightlife?
Kind of, it's more of like a neighborhood, and it's just more kind of there's more international like people, businesses. If you are a foreigner, you might gravitate toward Itaewon. That's just a general assumption. I, for one, never really went to Itaewon when I visited Seoul. Like I just felt like it was really cliche, like, oh, you're a foreigner, you go to Itaewon.
Oh, so you were too good. You were too good for it, is what you're saying?
Absolutely. I was like, I'm going to the local Korean cafes. Thank you. Like, I
Yeah.
don't need to go to places where they like have English menus, whatever. So yeah, it's just like one of those places where you might find like a bar that feels more westernized to you, right? There might be more people speaking English in Itaewon. But it's also on the, a downside is because it is known as a foreigner district, since the situation with the nightclub, a lot of English teachers have been targeted, being like, did you go to Itaewon? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you do realize foreigners have other things to do than just go to the one foreigner district in Korea. You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, oh my God, you're a foreigner. Did you go to Itaewon? It's like, I live on the other side of the country.
Imagine you taking like a 4 hour bus just to go hang out
Yeah,
there.
no, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah, actually, I took a 4 hour bus ride to go to Itaewon to go to that exact same club that that guy was at.
Not gonna lie, it sounds like something you would do.
Just for fun, just for funsies.
Yeah,
Just for funsies.
just for content. But yeah, well, Tina, I appreciate you coming on and telling your story. I've expended my social energy for today.